people around the world. Take your smartphone to your Bluetooth with your earpiece on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solid game. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd? Nerd up! Everybody say, grab your GPS and get up on your Segway. Nerd up! It's a way of the world. No matter where you are, you got a 4G signal.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson. Nerd Up!
All right, it's time for another Nerd Up Podcast. This time around, we got the full gang here because, hey, the holidays are over, and we're done bah humbugging. Well, anyway, welcome to the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, along with...
I'm Eric Billingsley.
Tim Coker.
And Tim Mattson, bringing up the rear.
I don't know. Yeah, we're back together again. It's been, holidays. Actually, last time we got together was just before Thanksgiving. What we should do first and foremost is find out what we all did over the holidays. Christmas, Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa. I think there were a couple others in there that I missed. I think Festivus and Winter Solstice. So we'll start with you, Eric. What'd you do over the holidays?
Oh, the usual, spending time with the family. Of course, you know, at this point, with the sister and all the nephews and the divorces and the families. It's just trying to schedule, the family gatherings has become like crazy. So our actual family gatherings were like days before the actual events. Like for Thanksgiving, I think we got together on the Sunday before Thanksgiving because that's the only day we could all get together. And then for Christmas, it was like a few days before Christmas as well. But you know, better to do it a few days before than not at all. So that was kind of the choice we were given. But ate way too much food. Got to spend time with the family, and that's always nice. So
did you do anything nerdy?
Well, I bought myself a Christmas present. I got a PlayStation 4, which I've been wanting for a while. As I've talked about on here before, I built my PC from the ground up, so it's a nice gaming rig. But I knew that there would be exclusives coming out on the PlayStation 4 that weren't going to be on the PC, like Destiny. And I finally, they had a good deal on it at Walmart. And yes, I'm one of those people who actually went to the Walmart on Thanksgiving night to get a special on the PlayStation 4. And as I deserve, it's actually been cheaper since then. So that's what I get for
crazy person. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I get for going out on Black Thursday, I guess.
Well, Tim Mattson, what did you do over the holidays?
Oh gosh, binged on a lot of food. We had a great time with the kids. We're all here at the house. Let's see, finished up run of The Odd Couple, and then I can't remember if I mentioned this on the podcast before. I ended up with a brand new girlfriend.
Ooh.
So I spent a lot of time with her over the holidays. It was fantastic.
See, nerds, it can be done.
It can be done. Here's the thing you have to do. This is the secret.
Uh-oh.
You have to just find someone who will tolerate you.
Amen, brother.
She tolerates me, and so, it's working out beautifully so far. But yeah, I too have been playing my PlayStation 4 over the holidays. Eric and I managed to play some Diablo 3 online the other night. It was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And basically just spending a lot of time with the family. That's been my deal, and we've had a great time.
Cool. What about you, Tim Coker? I know you had to have done something interesting and nerdy.
What I did is, in nerdy terms, I was a little too excited about the impending release of Guardians of the Galaxy on Blu-ray. So I guess it would have been probably early December. I started kind of when I had free time, maybe a half hour here or an hour there, starting with the first Iron Man movie, watching all of the Marvel movies in order.
Oh, wow.
Which I had never really done, you know? Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it took me a month, but But I ended up, you know, having a really great time kind of ending it up because there were some days off right in the middle of Christmas break. And so I did, you know, Thor the Dark World one day, Winter Soldier the next day, and then Guardians of the Galaxy the next day. And that was a lot of fun. Felt like a kid.
Before I forget, let me jump in here, just totally interrupt Tim. Did you guys read on, I think it was on Kotaku, about the dude who did a 10-hour supercut of the Marvel Universe using all the Marvel films and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. all cut together in chronological order?
Oh, my gosh. No.
Wow.
And he has detailed instructions on how you, with your copies of everything, can put everything in order by scene by scene so that everything flows in one long, continuous story.
Wow, that would be an amazing.
That's crazy.
That's a marathon.
Yeah.
That would...
I can feel my butt getting sore already.
Absolutely.
Although it does sound like a cool challenge.
Yeah.
Well, let's see here. I guess I'll tell you what I did. I found out over the holidays that Santa Claus listens to the Nerd Up podcast. Because
Scoop!
Yeah. Yeah.
Say what?
Yeah, he must because he bought me a DVD player, or brought me a DVD player. But no, a Blu-ray, because he was tired of you guys making fun of me for not having a Blu-ray, I guess. And he also brought me...
Welcome to the 21st century.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say.
Now I got to throw away all my old 8-tracks. But anyway, and he also brought me the Blu-ray of Guardians of the Galaxy, which we've only watched once since opening. I'm not sure why. Oh, I know why, because I also happen to get Dish Network and have been enjoying the holy crap out of the free 3 months of everything.
Yeah.
And so I've been watching a lot of, there's a one channel, it's like Showtime Beyond or something like that, and they show a lot of cult films. So I've been spending a lot of time educating Isaac on classics, you know, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original, Eraserhead, and, you know, a few others here and there.
Yeah.
So although he fell asleep before Eraserhead was really going. But, you know, yeah, Santa Claus listens because he knew the things I needed that we talked about on the podcast. That's a nice thing. Now, also, over the holidays, I got to tell you, one of the cool things that happened, and also another one of the reasons why the podcasts were few and far between, was I was busy organizing this NerdCon here in Robinson, Illinois. And let me tell you guys, they say build it and they will come. We did, and they did. It was an awesome success. Normally, when we first started Nerd Day, which is back in 2011, around in that time period, we had, you know, maybe 100 people show up, and we were happy with that, because that's all we wanted was to get a whole bunch of nerds together, play games, have some fun, talk nerdy. Well, as we gave up on it, so to speak, some of us business owners at the time, we kind of basically turned it over to some nerds, and it had lost its audience, going down to about 20 to 40 people, maybe, per event. So this time around, I jumped back in with it, helped organize it, and I said, look, let's change the name from Nerd Day to NerdCon, and let's make it big. And we did. We had artists from Chicago come down, Darb Designs. We had a couple of artists come in. They were local artists, but they came in. They were doing the headshots, custom sketches and stuff like that, just like at any convention. And of course, we had all the gaming and everything. And let me tell you, one of the guys that helped put it on, he's been with us since the beginning. And he says, every time this happens, he said, I just know that we're going to lose money. We're just going to lose money, but that's not the cause. We're here to have some fun and to spread nerdiness. Well, he made... I don't want to give the dollar amount, but he made, let's just say a five-figure profit, if you count cents.
All right.
So you got to count cents in there, too, I think. No, that'd make it a seven-figure profit. Okay. But anyway, no, he made...
I'm not sure that's how that works.
He made a huge profit, and we had over 200 people attend. The artists were just enthralled. The guys from Chicago said, wow, I can't believe such a small town can do something this big. And that right there was enough for me. We had a huge success. We're going to do another one. We're going to make it an annual event, but we're going to aim more for the summertime area because we just think it's better than the cold wintertime, although it was... Yeah. It was quite warm inside the building. It was just enough to get people, you know, to come in out of the cold, I guess. But we're going to go for the summer times, and we're going to have some good times with it. It's going to be a blast. And next time around we have it, guys, we're all going to get together and podcast live. We'll see. It'll be a good one. Cool. Oh, and by the way, Isaac once again took first place in the cosplay as Deathstroke.
Yeah, congratulations, Isaac.
Yeah, he got
to throw that up on the face or on our Facebook page.
I did, yeah. At one point, I posted the pictures on it. I was busy posting pictures all day on our Facebook page, so we got carried away at some points. But anyway, yeah, it was a huge success, and it was a great... I think one of the things that really made us a success was really that it was that close to the holidays, and a lot of people were buying items for gifts. So I'm thinking we might have to do a winter and a summer, so I don't know. Being close to the holidays helped out. Speaking of the holiday, let's move on to our first topic for this Nerd Up podcast. Let's talk about the Doctor Who Christmas special. You guys saw that, right?
Oh, yeah.
I did.
No.
Oh.
There's always one in the crowd.
Yeah.
But
now, Tim, you're officially checked out of Doctor Who, right?
Yeah. That's actually a legitimate question for me now. Doctor Who?
I see what you did there.
I've seen up through, I will say, I've watched through episode 5 of the current run, and I want very much to like it. I want very, very much to like it. And it's hit and miss for me. More miss than hit, unfortunately. And that's a real shame, because I really like Peter Capaldi, and I really like his Doctor. I just don't like what they're doing with him and around him.
It seems like during the season of it, or during the series of it, they were going back and forth between, okay, this is the serious Doctor Who, this is the one we love, this is the one from the 60s and 70s, and then they'd go back to the reboot Doctor Who stories, and it's like, go back and forth. I can see that, but along the same lines, I'm still not sure about the ending of that season or that series. In Great Britain, they call it a series rather than a season. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how I feel about that ending. But they always throw in a good Christmas show it usually has nothing to do with the timeline or what's going on in the regular series story. Let's start with you, Tim Coker. What do you think of the Christmas special?
Well, you'll be surprised. I didn't hate it, and I am. Yeah, no. I have given a name to my pain, and the name is Doctor Who Christmas Specials, because I like, you know. Lifelong Doctor Who fanatic since I was, 11, 1979, mm-hmm. Doctor Who fanatic. And, you know, that's a long time. And there are things about the new show that I love and things about the new show that I really hate. And one of the things that really wearies me about the new show is how gloppily sentimental and over-emotional and shamelessly punching for the feels all the time it's become.
Yes.
Because to me, that is totally alien to the spirit of Doctor Who, but it's everything about Russell T. Davis and how he recreated the show and made it so popular. So, you know, I have to deal with varying amounts of that all through the season. But the Christmas special is always just the worst. I mean, whether it's those horrible singing space whales or the planet of the Christmas trees or where the Doctor spends 300 years making toys for the children of frickin' Christmas Town. Like it's always just, like, honestly, it leaves me stressed out and angry. You know, every Doctor Who Christmas special leaves me stressed out and angry. So with this one, I realized that all those episodes, like I said earlier on our Facebook chat, all those episodes from previous Christmases have basically given me aversion therapy, so that Clockwork Orange style, I could not bring myself to watch this Christmas special because it would just always be such a bring down. But finally today, I realized I had to watch it for the show. And I was shocked. It doesn't start well, but it's pretty clever. And I mean, I can get into more detail about it. You know, all of Stephen Moffat's limitations as a writer are on full display in it. I think especially, like, I don't know what it's going to take to get him to stop introducing new menaces into the show that are perception based. Don't look at it. Don't blink. Don't think about it. You know, it seems like every new thing he comes up with, it's always don't blank, whatever it is that seems natural. And he's got to stop with that stuff. But all in all, in spite of shamelessly recycled ideas like that, as well as blatantly ripping off a couple of science fiction classics.
Oh, yeah.
And then I can't decide whether they got away with it with their cheeky little acknowledgement of it. I don't really
think
so.
I think they did.
I don't know. I linked with that too.
All right. So, you know, but I give them points for keeping me guessing and not having it be horrible. And I actually thought the emotional stuff in the episode was pretty well done. And, you know, there was no giant push in close up on Clara's face as she weeps and pleads with the Doctor to make everyone Christmas time or whatever. You know, it was emotionally, you know, it was just it was a good episode. I liked it. I thought the characters were all pretty enjoyable, and Nick Frost was not humiliated, which is great. I was really dreading, like, looking at Nick Frost like he's some kind of asshole for playing a horrible Santa and a terrible Doctor Who Christmas special, but in the end he was pretty good.
Yeah.
Because I love Nick Frost. I just didn't want him to be tarnished like that.
Well, before I want Eric to jump in, or not jump in, but after I'm done you could jump in, but I wanted to say that you talked about the ripping off the other sci-fi movies. I mean, the one, the elephant in the room, Alien, you know, the face huggers yeah. and everything else. I thought it was kind of interesting that they mentioned it and throughout. You're like, well, you know, in fact, Isaac and I were saying, you know, what are they going to send in the Marines next and try to get rid of these things? And, we're making fun of it, you know, like a almost a MST3K type, but using references from the Alien movie. And it was, at first, I was like, man, that's kind of, you know, distracting. It's very distracting is what it was.
Yeah.
And then after a while, they mentioned it, and I'm like, okay, that's out of the way. All right, we got it. And then at the towards the end, and yes, spoiler, a good Doctor Who spoiler is perfect in a Nerd Up podcast, by the way. But the girl that goes home and she's got a list of things to do over the holidays. One of them is to watch Alien.
Yeah.
A couple other things that were actually
Game of Thrones.
They were all things that happened through this so-called dream sequence. So it was, I thought that was, to me, they pulled it off that way. I thought that was a good nod to the classics, if you will. I mean, I always think Alien is a classic sci-fi. There's just
absolutely. Yeah.
And I thought that was a great nod to it after they did that, when that girl said that was her list of things to do. Because, you know, before that, like I said, it was distracting. Then they mentioned it, and I'm like, okay, I can handle that. And then when she did the little list, and then I'm like, oh, okay, they pulled it off. That to me, that solidified it for me. But I did like the ongoing Santa Claus references, everything, especially the tangerines. Oh, my gosh. I thought that was a perfect ongoing gag, was the little tangerines. And, in fact, I thought, as I went out, I was going to go buy a whole bunch of tangerines and just give them out to people. But and walnuts. Yeah, I thought it was an interesting one. It was definitely not the sappy Christmas specials of the past. Was the Mars, Water on Mars, was that a Christmas special?
No.
Okay.
But it was bad enough to be one.
Yeah. Because I was going to say, that was the worst one I saw out of all of them. But anyway... that was just had a bunch of Bowie references. That's right. But the other aspect
that was part of that little mini season.
Yeah,
where they did just a series of specials.
That's what it was. Yeah, yeah. Okay, I knew this had something to do with out of the regular series. Again, this Christmas one, they really worked in a great storyline that at the end of the show tied it all in. I like those types of where you leaves you wondering throughout, and then at the end you're like, oh yeah, I see. But along the same lines, the Santa Claus bit almost got old, actually, especially the elves trying to explain themselves, being kind of sarcastic. So actually more like hipsters is what they were. But
elves.
All the little elves. Nothing really.
Why did they have three Easter jokes in it? Yeah. That was weird.
But no, I don't know. It's just I was definitely entertained. I laughed. I didn't cry. I don't know. I had a good time watching it all in all as a whole. But there were moments where, again, I was slightly distracted at first by all the Alien references and then almost annoyed until they cleared it up for me. But no, I think they did a pretty good job of it as a single piece of entertainment outside of the Doctor Who storyline. Maybe that's the best way to look at it. Eric, what do you think?
Well, this has been, I'm like Tim, most of the almost without exception, the Christmas specials are all very disappointing, but it's become like a Christmas tradition for me to, even though I'm like, okay, it's going to disappoint me like it does every year. But this year it didn't. And there have been moments through previous, a handful of previous Christmas specials that there were some good points. Like the one with Michael Gambon had some good moments, and I love Michael Gambon anyway. So it was that one. That's probably the next down on the list. But this was my favorite of all the Christmas specials. It was different in that it did not feel like the Christmas thing was forced or shoehorned in. It also didn't feel like it was condescending. Like, okay, Doctor Who has always been a kid show. It's a kid show that adults can enjoy. So I guess I should say that it's a family show. But the whole concept of Doctor Who was as a science fiction entertainment that would also educate kids, and the educate part kind of fell by the wayside quite some time ago, but that's all right. But I mean, it's a very entertaining show, and it's one that the whole family can enjoy. That said, I get the feeling that for the Christmas specials, that they feel like they have to make it more kid friendly, so they dumb it down. And it's not like the new Doctor Who is like, you know, really complex or a high concept in any way whatsoever. So the idea of feeling like you had to dumb it down so that the kiddies can enjoy it on Christmas just seems a completely ridiculous concept to begin with. But that's the way most of the Christmas specials wind up feeling. And it feels like the Christmas element feels completely shoehorned into it. And it's just a big mess. Yeah, the Christmas episodes are the low points of any season of Doctor Who. Well, but this one wasn't. This one felt everything felt integrated. Even Santa Claus, which when I at the end of the season, you saw Nick Frost show up at the post credits teaser as Saint Nick. And even though I kind of knew it was coming and I knew Nick Frost was going to be in it, I was like, oh, Santa Claus, there's no way that this is not going to suck. But the way that they integrated Santa Claus into it was completely, I mean, I don't want to say believable, but it worked.
Right.
It was because it was.
It made sense.
Exactly. Yeah. It was, you know, it was all their imagination. They were, you know, it was all a big dreams had a huge part to play in this, in what was going on. And a collective consciousness or a collective dream was the whole concept. So of course it's on Christmas Eve. So Santa Claus is on everyone's mind. So yeah, he's going to be a character in this little drama that's playing out. And here's the thing that I've come to accept about Stephen Moffat. And it doesn't really bother me anymore because I know this is his thing and he's always going to do this. He loves to be the insider. He loves to cater to the fans and say, you see that? I'm referencing that from you know, the episode that was, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he does that all the time. He's obsessed with it. And it bothered me a lot at first, but I've come to accept that about him. And there was a lot of that in this episode, but it made me laugh. And it was clever for the most part and funny. And then Peter Capaldi is great at playing that off and delivering those lines. And I love the little standoffishness between him and Santa Claus. And I love the quips about probably my favorite line in the entire episode was, Capaldi's kind of arguing with him about how Santa Claus can't possibly exist. He's like, well, how do you fit all those gifts in that sleigh? He said, there's not enough room. And there's a beat. And of course he goes, it's bigger on the inside.
That was a clever one.
That was awesome. I love that. Well, and there's a lot of that going on. And I love the acknowledgement about Alien because it had to be done because we all know that that's what was the inspiration for those things. And I also thought that was pretty funny that, you know, he complained that, oh, you have a movie called Alien? How offensive.
Yeah.
No wonder no one comes to this place.
Yeah. Isaac, I think, made a list of things that Doctor Who have made him afraid of. One of them was blinking, and then there's one that's, it came out to finally ice cream headaches. So now when you have an ice cream headache, you got one more thing to worry about.
Uh-huh. Something's drilling into your brain.
Well, now, you know, I always put it together. Every Christmas special I've seen of Doctor Who, they've been, I don't know, borderline campy. And this one was like we're all kind of come to agreement that it's better than most. But along the same lines, you know, the first three Star Wars movies, those were awesome. The Star Wars Christmas special, not so much. So there, use that as comparison.
I had three more things I wanted to praise about the special, just compliments, because as you guys know, I don't praise the new series that often, so I wanted to do it while I can. And then I have two pointed questions.
Someone write down this episode number. We want to refer to this in the future.
So first of all, I loved that when the Doctor and Clara came clean to each other about what they had told each other in the season finale, mm-hmm. I thought, oh my God, it's the gift of the Magi, but the gift they gave each other was life-enabling lies. Which was just crazy because I think that was on purpose. I really think that he was trying to do some kind of a weird gift of the Magi thing.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And that was hysterical. So props for that. I often rag on Stephen Moffat for being a lot more clever than he is wise. But I have to say that when he's clever and it works. So I thought that was great. The part where Clara is being attacked by the facehugger in the lab obviously is lifted whole cloth from Aliens.
Oh,
but
yeah, right.
One of the things, the other things that I think Doctor Who really, like, is job one for Doctor Who is scaring the hell out of little kids. And in a way that they love, you know what I mean? But mm-hmm. but that's what Doctor Who's always been controversial for, sure. for being too scary for kids. And I, to the point where I think the new series sometimes pulls its punches a little too much, but I thought that, you know, I really give them props for in the Christmas episode, scaring the hell out of the little yes. kids who have not seen Aliens. I mean, that was some of the most full on horror I've ever seen on Doctor Who. And then putting it in a Christmas special was a classy move. Yes, so the chalkboard gag was great when Clara kept erasing the word and the next word would appear. I just thought that was a really like beautiful piece of visual storytelling. I really liked it.
That was interesting. Yeah. And,
yeah. You know, I thought it was a really nice piece of intrusion into her world and then how it got integrated and stuff. Now my two pointed questions at the end of the episode, number one, are they all still in the dream? Because I didn't see any bleeding head wounds on anybody.
Explain that ice cream headache. Yes.
Right. Right. I mean, nobody had the bleeding head, and the doctor said, the reason you don't have a bleeding head wound is because you're still in the dream.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the episode, not a single person is like, oh, blood, you know?
Yeah.
So, okay, that's A. Maybe they're still in the dream, and the season finale is going to be them getting their brains sucked out again. But who shot JR, right? And
I was thinking more along the lines it all happened in a snow globe, but, you know.
Yeah, it's in their dream, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're all having a dream, and then one by one, they all wake up off of Santa's sleigh and disappear, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Clara and the doctor both wake up, and then it's another dream. So is what's-her-name dreaming that she's on her couch alone, and is the other one dreaming that she's in her wheelchair at her house? Okay. You know, like, are they all still dreaming?
Okay, I've done some reading on this. Now, I can't answer whether they're still dreaming or not, but, and this is part of what I wanted to say, too, about why this was a unique episode, is that they've been publicizing for a while that Clara was going to leave, and it was pretty much assumed she would leave at the end of the season. So most fans were expecting this to be Clara's farewell episode, and the way that considering that basically her and the doctor parted ways at the end of the last season, this was going to be their last hurrah. I commend them on being able to keep it quiet that she was going to stay on for another season. She decided that she's not going to leave and she's going to stay on for one more season. And they were able to keep this quiet until this episode ran, or at least I didn't hear anything about it. So if it did leak out, it was
right.
You know, fairly quiet, because I mean, I've got Facebook with all kinds of Doctor Who groups on it, so I usually hear about these things whether I want to or not. So I have to give them kudos for being able to keep that under wraps and really coming up with a surprising ending. Now, that much said, from what I've read online is that, and there, you know, the Moffat will not confirm or deny this, but the fans have speculated that the original ending was Clara as an old woman, and that it was going to be this really bitter ending, which I'm so glad they didn't go with. It actually didn't make much sense to me that, you know, everyone else woke up normal and she woke up an old woman. She stayed in the sleigh a little bit longer, but that just didn't really ring true to me. But then, of course, it was a dream within a dream, and they wake up and she's normal again. But it didn't really gel with the rest of the episode. Like I said, everything felt very integrated, but that false ending didn't. It felt kind of tacked on, and it left me wondering, which is why I went online and read up on it, and I came and, you know, I found all these theories that the original ending was going to be her as the old lady, and that, you know, there was going to be this kind of bitter parting of the ways because, you know, the doctor never came back for her or whatever. And I'm so glad that that didn't happen. But anyway, that's what I read. What the actual intention was, I have no idea.
I have a feeling that the final episode will be Tom Baker waking up saying, wow, what a dream. One can only hope. Well, all right. Well, I guess that seals it up for the Doctor Who Christmas special. Let's talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Agent Carter, which, by the way, I've got it running on my television right now, and I got one question. You guys, when you watch this, she's in a fight. Agent Carter's in a fight with this guy. I don't know who it is yet. He's holding her head above a burning stove. I want to know why her hair didn't catch fire. But anyway, that's beside the point. Let's talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. How about that ending? They found the city. They get the obelisk to open up and transform. Now, at the end of it, you got Skye's real name, Daisy. I've seen a lot of speculation online. In fact, I kind of gave you a link to on our Facebook chat, guys, to a Marvel Wiki page talking about Daisy Johnson, who is Quake. And that's where a lot of speculation is going, is that that's where she's going to be, or who she's going to be. What do you guys think of the, well, go ahead and let's start out with, with Eric. Let's start with you this time around. What'd you think of the season finale of Agents, or well, mid-season finale
yeah.
Of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Well, this entire season really has had very few low points. I mean, this has been, I've been wowed pretty much every episode, but that much said, the last two episodes, or maybe even three, leading up to the mid-season finale, have just been phenomenal. I've been on the edge of my seat. I feel like anything can happen. And, I mean, are we talking about spoilers? I mean, it's been a while, so I think we can talk about spoilers, right?
Absolutely.
And I can't remember the character's name, but the guy who's the descendant of one of the Howling Commandos.
Trip.
Yeah. Trip. I mean, I knew when he got locked in that vault that things weren't going to go well for him, and mm-hmm. now he's gone, and I was like, oh my god, they killed off Trip. And then the other guy who got all crazy from the got possessed basically by the defense of the city, I don't know if we don't know what's happened to him, right?
I don't think
Mac's not dead. We don't know he's not what's happened with him. I hope they don't kill him off too. But the thing is it's like, I don't want to say that anyone can bite the bullet in the show, but they've kind of put that kind of feel into it that no one's really safe.
They've created that illusion anyway.
Yeah. Well, for a while I thought Ward was dead until the end of the episode, but
yeah, I love what they're doing with Ward. I have no idea what they're doing with Ward now. I keep thinking I know what they're going to do with Ward, and then he you know, they do a 90 degree turn on it. And I mean, what I think that they're going to be doing with Ward, and it seems to be supported so far, is he's going to be the wild card, right? Mm-hmm. He's always at looking after his own agenda, but sometimes his agenda will dovetail with S.H.I.E.L.D.'s, and sometimes it'll be at odds with S.H.I.E.L.D., depending on what his personal agenda happens to be, which I think makes him a very interesting character and someone that I want to see come back, because he can be the one who's going to tip balance. Mm-hmm. And of course, he's got, you know, that connection with Sky. Well, he's got a connection or a past with everyone in S.H.I.E.L.D., so I'm really digging what they're doing with that character right now. I like what they're doing with all the characters, and I don't know. I can't say enough good things about it. I love what they're doing with S.H.I.E.L.D. right now.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing that I found interesting is the Koenig brothers. I love the way they're playing on that.
Yeah,
so great.
Patton Oswalt's got a great career now. But yeah, the focus on characterization, I mean, that's what Marvel's doing best in their movies and on this TV series season. But the thing is, they're also developing everything to fit into the Marvel world. That's why I brought up that Daisy Johnson. Now, there also is a Daisy Dugan in the Marvel mythos. Not much said about her, but she's a direct descendant of Dum-Dum Dugan, of course. At first, that's who I thought she was going to be, but then I'm like, no, that's not right, because I already told who her father and mother were, so I don't think so. But yeah, so Daisy Johnson, Quake, who has the power to... She actually defeated Magneto at one point.
Wow.
By creating an alternate resonating vibration to what his magnetic vibration was. But yeah, I mean, she's an awesome character. If that's what they're going to create, I hope they do that. Tim Coker, you're the comic book fiend, especially the Marvel zombie. What do you got to say about it?
I thought, well, you mean about Daisy or the episode in general?
All that.
Yeah, no, I think it's really funny, because all through the first season, I kept hoping, you know, all this standing around is really gonna make you feel the craziness when it happens. And boy, since they started like turning the crazy lever on the show, it seems like it only ratchets one way on that show, and that's crazier and crazier. I just love it. Yeah, no, I was pleased that. First of all, I don't think that fandom in general figured out that she was Daisy, aka Quake, you know, until like the week before that episode. So that's pretty cool that they were able to keep a lid on it that long.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. I think it might make Sky more interesting. I you know, Tim, it's funny. I've thought a lot about an offhand comment you made months ago, just talking about how you're really not that into Sky. And I was like, oh, no, Sky's okay. But honestly, when I think about it, I don't really love her. I think it might be the actress, and just that there's something about her that doesn't quite pull me in the ways the other cast members do. But I hope that this gives her like some extra dimension, and maybe, I don't know, rounds her out even more. One thing I will say is, I wonder if it means she's going to show up in Captain America 3 Civil War, because, you know, that's all about everybody with superpowers having to get on board. So
that's right. Quake plays a major part in Civil War, doesn't she? Or a bigger part than...
I think so. Yeah, she was one of Nick Fury's Secret Avengers.
Yeah,
or Secret... Was it Secret Avengers? Anyway.
I think so.
But the episode overall I thought was really good. I mean, one thing that I thought was funny was they keep talking about the city. We're going to go to the city and everything. And And I've got to say, that was like almost, I would say actually Sylvester McCoy or a Doctor Who level visualization of the buried aliens. Like, it was very low end. And I kind of don't know why they didn't just call it like an underground temple. And then it doesn't have the, you know what I mean? Because I was like, I wanted to see the city. And I know that I shouldn't go to the show for spectacle because it doesn't do spectacle that well. So but you know, it was just one of those things. But I don't know. I thought it was good. I can't wait to see what Raina turning into. I have no idea.
And I like her character too.
Yeah. Yeah. And having Sky, Daisy, whatever we call her, just up and shoot Ward like that was that's right up there with the nail gun on the foot, you know, last season. So I really thought it was terrific. And, you know, I don't know. It's a wonderful thing to be all caught up in it. And I just wish there was more. So hopefully Agent Carter will do us up right.
We'll see. We'll see. Well, Tim Mattson, what about you? What's your take on the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Are you caught up on it?
I am not, but I'm aware enough of what's going on that I can talk about it. I'm with Tim on my assessment of that character. I honestly think it's the actress. I just don't think she's clicking for me. The character, although I do stand by my statements that the character is definitely a blank sheet for most of season one. It's just, she's really super dull and uninteresting. And all we do is hear about how great she is from everybody, about how much she's a part of the team and how essential she is. And we never really see her be essential in any way, shape, or form. We're only told. But then again, that's the biggest problem with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for the first half of season one is we're not shown much of anything. We're told what a great team they are. We're told how they're doing this.
Yeah.
There's a lot of telling and not a lot of showing.
Yeah.
And I think that's because they're saving their budget as much as possible for the second half push and for this season. And in which case, they use the money well, because I like this season so much more than the first season. I'm with you guys. It has been pleasant to watch this whole time. I'm very intrigued by where it's going. The characters are much more interesting this time around, and the actors have really kind of sunk into their roles in a believable way now. I still don't click with Sky all that well, but I'm willing to accept her a lot more than I was to begin with.
Well, I got a question for you guys. I don't know. It's something I noticed on this last episode more than I did previous episodes, but they seem to be giving her more of an Eastern Asian look. You know, have you guys noticed this?
I haven't.
I was watching especially the last episode. Her eyes are less round. And of course, it's a makeup thing, of course. But I'm thinking before they didn't know where they were going to go in the story until they found, you know, who her mother was and all that stuff. But it's weird. She's got more of an Asian look in the last episode that they did. And
well, when they said she was born in China, which I think is like in season one, we found that out. I was like, oh, well, she must have had American parents because she doesn't look the least bit Asian.
Right.
Yeah.
And then in this last
episode, she looked Amerasian. I don't know. You don't think
maybe, maybe a little, but
now, even on the last episode, more so. I mean, it's like 100%. Maybe it's just my perception being skewed by actually seeing her mother and putting it together. But still, it's like it seemed like this last episode they made her even more so. I mean, not that it's got anything to do with the story. I mean, she can look however she wants. But I thought it was kind of interesting. If you get a chance, go back and watch that last episode and take a look at her and see if I'm. Just maybe I'm putting it together wrong.
It wouldn't be a Nerd Up podcast if I didn't take another shot at DC. So I will just say that it is interesting how they are building their world, even with their TV show, and how this does play into this whole Inhumans thing, the word that none of us have mentioned yet, the Inhumans being a thing that's going to be important in the Marvel Universe coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And they've kind of introduced that in the TV show. That's something that DC is like, absolutely, this will never happen.
Yeah,
Arrow and Flash have no impact on our movies whatsoever. Why
it's all
they?
Separate.
Yep.
It's absolutely 100% separate. They should not cross paths.
And it's wrong that they do it.
It's just, it's very disappointing.
Yeah.
I just want to point out again that it's a lost opportunity.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, that's one of the things when we're talking about the Inhumans. That's when they're going to find this city and they're going to open up the temple. I thought for sure, oh my gosh, they're going to release the Terrigen Mist. And then I was like, oh, wait, that'd be too early to do that. It looked like they were going to build up to that. And by the way, Tim Coker, you, last podcast we were all together, you had mentioned the logo for the Inhumans on the recent comics had that writing in them. I went back and looked at every one of them. Yes, it is the same stuff that he was carving.
Isn't that crazy?
And it was weird, yeah. They're tying everything together as they can
do. You know, it was interesting what you said earlier that about maybe Sky showing up in one of the upcoming movies, the Civil War. We've been, you know, excited about the prospect of seeing characters from the Marvel films show up in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I hadn't really put much thought about seeing these characters show up in the films.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be very surprised if they don't, because that seems to be exactly what Marvel is wanting to do, is to integrate these properties in these universes and, you know, make them seamless components of each other. And I mean, of course, Coulson makes, you know, bounces back and forth, but we haven't seen him in the last, what, one or two movies. Mm-hmm.
I worry about that, though, because part of, there's just an essential difference between actors who are in movies and actors who do TV shows. Not to, like, ghettoize, you know, one, but if you watch, now, I'm a big fan of How I Met Your Mother. I think that's a very fun TV show. Very clever. The cast is very good on the TV show. But Kobe Smulders has very little presence on a movie screen. I just really don't think she has much presence at all. Whereas Clark Gregg, I think, is able to transition from one medium to the other easily because he has a lot of charisma and a lot of presence as an actor in front of the camera. He radiates a lot of energy and can hold his own next to someone like Samuel L. Jackson, whereas Kobe Smulders just disappears into the woodwork when standing among all those other actors in the movie.
I see what you're saying, and I agree to a certain point, but I Kobe Smulders, I actually, before I knew who she was, I mean, in the first Avengers movie, I think that was the first time I remember seeing her or where she stood out to me. But I have granted, it was largely because of the way she looks, because she looks like a young Jennifer Connelly. So she did stand up. But yeah, she's no ScarJo as far as her personality and charisma goes. But I don't think that she's a detriment in that role.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that she's bad or that she is a detriment. I'm just saying that she just, it's like putting a 40-watt bulb in among a bunch of 100-watt bulbs. Yes, it still gives off light, but one is clearly not performing like the others are. Do you see what I mean?
Right. But what I'm saying, though, is that I don't want to see, like, Sky take a starring role in any of these films. God, no. But it would be cool to see her show up for, like, a cameo, or maybe a little more than a cameo, but as a bit player in the movie. But just by having those characters show up here and there, scattered throughout, and, you know, maybe playing a pivotal role, not like actor role, but maybe playing a pivotal role in the plot at some point, if it's a good, you know, if it's a decent actor or whatever. Just, you know, I'm just spinning here and speculating, but the concept of that makes me excited, that to see these characters go back and forth. And, you know, I of course, I'm sure you guys have heard that RDJ has expressed interest in doing a cameo on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which really surprised me, considering that, you know, he's been the one hammering for more money all along and has been, you know, in the past threatened to leave the Avengers or leave the Marvel Universe. So that was very surprising and quite a turnaround. And I'm sure that there are other actors who are playing in their key roles that would be willing to do the same. We haven't seen it happen yet, but this is just halfway through the second season.
Yeah.
But the idea is exciting.
With him, I'm not sure who needs who more. Honestly, I mean, I don't know if Marvel needs Robert Downey Jr. more or Robert Downey Jr. needs Marvel more.
Well, they definitely put him back on top. I mean, if it wasn't for Iron Man, I can't say that he would be an A-list actor.
I agree.
All right, well, let's talk real quick about Agent Carter. It's premiering as we speak now, and basically it's kind of like it's a period piece, really, if you think about it. I mean, it's set back in the early days of the Red Skull and all the other cool stuff going on with Howard Stark, Tony Stark's dad. One thing I like, and I kind of mentioned this on just as a jest, but I like the Twin Peaks tie-in they got going here. You got Kyle MacLachlan on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and you got Ray Wise on Agent Carter. I like, wait, maybe David Lynch will be coming in and, hey, cool.
I think we can all agree anything is better with more Ray Wise in it. Yeah.
You know, I like that guy.
I do too.
Yeah, he's phenomenal.
Did anybody ever watch the show Reaper?
I watched a couple episodes of it. He was the best part of that show.
He is by far the best part of that show. He's absolutely wonderful. I would encourage you, it only lasted 2 seasons. It limped through 2 seasons.
Yeah.
It's definitely worth catching up. I'm not sure if it's on Netflix. Do yourself a favor. Watch a few episodes of that. Ray Wise is wonderful as the devil.
Yeah, he makes a perfect devil. I kept wanting him to sing that Mersey'd Oats and Dozy'd Oats and Little Lindsay'd Ivy song, but he never did.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ray Wise, he's a fun character. In fact, he was great in the Swamp Thing movie.
Yeah.
He knows how to do a role right. He's the guy that can go from TV to movies, no problem.
He's a very good character actor.
Real deal.
What I've been watching so far of this, like I said, I've been keeping an eye on Agent Carter so far, and pretty much it's been about her. None of the Howling Commandos have really made an appearance. So do you think they're going to incorporate the Howling Commandos in this? I mean, I think they should.
I can't imagine that they won't.
At least some of them.
Yeah. I mean, so far, I haven't seen any of the other Howling Commandos other than Agent Carter.
Well, you remember earlier in the season, we saw a flashback with Agent Carter and the Howling Commandos were in that.
Yeah.
I can't imagine why they wouldn't be in her show.
Right. That's what
they'll probably show up later.
I'm waiting for one hero to show up. You know who that would be?
Shazam.
Sorry, bad joke.
Mobile.
Yeah. Sergeant Carter. Agent Carter. Sorry, I got that confused.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Have you guys seen the Agent?
Tim, your enthusiasm is overwhelming there.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you could just, you know, put the cover sheets on the TV in this room, that'd be great. Gary Cole, man. Anyway, did you guys watch the Agent Carter one-shot that was on the Iron Man 3 DVD or Blu-ray, I think?
I still haven't seen it.
I have to get that on
Blu-ray.
That's
worth checking out. It takes place, I think, directly before this show, so it'll just give you a little setup but I'm sure it's not essential. But it's a fun little thing to see, and it's got a really great Howling Commando cameo at the end of it for like a minute. You know,
cool.
It's like the Sam Rockwell cameo in the Mandarin one shot.
Okay. Well, I got to ask you, who is the guy that plays Dum Dum Dugan in all these? What's that actor's name?
Anybody? Oh, I can't remember. I'll look it up.
He does
crystal blue eyes and the blonde, the really platinum blonde hair.
Yeah.
Is that the guy?
I don't know about platinum. Is it platinum blonde? I don't know.
Is he the one that wore the derby?
Yeah. Okay. I can't remember his hair color. But yeah. Well, see, I look back at a couple issues of comic books and saw a picture of Dum Dum Dugan. I'm like, holy crap, that's the same guy. It's like they did such a great job. But I thought he fit the role perfectly. Hopefully, we will see more of him in there. And so far, I have seen some really neat toys that they use, you know, the spy toys. But anyway, all right, well, let's talk about, real quick, we're going to close up the podcast pretty soon. I want to close out with a couple of items real quick. I know, Tim, you got a comic book you want to recommend, and I got a quick comic series I want to recommend. Go ahead with yours first, Tim Mattson.
Okay, cool. It actually, I'm a little late to the bandwagon here because we haven't recorded, but Mimetic is something I would recommend. It's a three-issue comic. It just wrapped up with its third issue. It's an interesting kind of take on what the zombie kind of outbreak would look like in the internet age. Basically, someone has embedded in a meme this information that drives people insane. It fills them with this euphoria upon viewing this image, and it makes them want to keep looking at it and keep looking at it, and it drives them insane. And it's basically what happens to the world when an internet meme is everywhere and people can't stop sending it.
That makes sense. I mean, especially cell phones. Interesting. Now,
sounds good.
Who publishes that? Do you know off the top of your head?
Oh, gosh, no, I do not.
Boom Studios.
Boom.
Okay. All right, I'm going to look for that.
You guys should check it out. I'd be interested to hear what you thought of the whole run. I won't talk about the ending now because I don't want to spoil anything in case you do watch it or do look at it. I think it's a really interesting story. I don't know how I feel about the ending per se. It's interesting. it definitely did not end the way I expected it to end.
Let me talk about real quick. I'm late to the game on this one as well. The whole Spider-Verse run that Marvel Comics is doing. J. Michael Straczynski actually created the idea behind this when he wrote for Spider-Man way back when. I want to say in the early 2000s, he did a storyline, might have been earlier than that, but where there was a guy named Ezekiel that was warning Peter Parker about the power of the spider, and it's not just him being bitten by a radioactive spider. There's a whole culture of spider-type hero, villain things, and it's been so long since I've read it, I can't remember the exact storyline, but I do know that this was like an amazing run. I've got it on the trade paperback. I'm going to have to go back and reread it after I get done with the Spider-Verse. But the idea behind this, it all starts out when Peter Parker, he's back in his body. Doc Ock is no longer controlling his brain. And but Doc Ock's superior Spider-Man still plays a part in this Spider-Verse. So, he comes back, and all of a sudden he realizes, or he gets this feeling, a spider sense, of course, that something else is, there's something off. I guess that's the best way to put that. And he discovers there was another person, a girl, that was bitten at the same time he was by the same spider. And she's been locked up by this Ezekiel in a chamber for years. And basically she's wanting to get out, but she knows she can't because the inheritors are going to destroy her. And they're going to destroy the whole world in which she lives on. But she gets out, and she goes by the name of Silk as a superhero. And she and Peter Parker, every time they're together, the spider pheromones just take over, and it's like two teenagers in love. And it's just, they cannot be separated. Now, I want to say this real quick, and again, I've never been a fan of comic book boobs, but the way they draw Silk is phenomenal. And they're not typical comic book boobs, I'll put it that way. But the way they draw her, it's like one of the hottest female characters I've ever seen in comics. But anyway...
Well. I'd like to be the counterpoint on this. I do like comic book boobs.
But they team up, and then all of a sudden, all these Spider-Men's and women's from multiverses or other Earths start making appearances through these portals, and they're trying to get all the spider people together safe because the inheritors are trying to eat them. And that's, and they do. They kept, the first one to die is Shakespeare. Spider-Man, he's got that little doublet thing around his neck, and it's weird looking, but he's the first one to die because he's the wimpiest, I guess. But they eat him. They just literally eat him, and then they capture some other Spider-Man and put him on a dinner table, and they eat them. I mean, it's just bizarre. They're absorbing their powers or whatever they're doing, but they're after spiders. And the cool thing about it is they're creating all these alternate Spider-Men, like there's Spider-Man Noir, you know, back in the 30s Spider-Man. There's Gwen Stacy becomes a Spider-Person. I'm trying to think, there's so many, and the Ben Reilly, all the clones, all those, they come into play, and Superior Spider-Man. The cool thing about it is Doc Ock's Superior Spider-Man, he is the one that's actually getting these people organized to protect themselves. And he's the one, you know, with his great big brain of his, actually able to command them as an army of Spider-Men. So that's where I've left off on this. I'm late to the game on it. I think they've almost finished the whole storyline. But the amount of different spiders there are throughout the multiverse is just amazing. And their origin stories that they keep coming up with are just, it's some really creative writing. And it's really one of the best. And being a Spider-Man fan, I thought, well, they're going to burn me out on Spider-Man. But no, each time they create a new one, it's like, this is cool. I want to see this one. I want to have him have his own comic book. But they've incorporated everyone that has already been in print, plus they're creating new Spider-Man, and Superior Spider-Man is, you know, Doc Ock is also in charge to an extent. It's really cool. It's a really interesting take on the Spider-Man universe and the multiverse and Earth 616 Spider-Man meets all these others. It's really cool. So it's worth the effort and worth it. It goes across several comics. I mean, they've got their own Spider-Verse comics. There's also... Amazing Spider-Man, and then there's a couple other issues that have had different Spider-Man come across on it. It's a great crossover comic line, just like Ends of the Earth and Spider Island and all the other good ones. So it's definitely worth the effort. There's a lot of books to read in it, but they're a lot of fun.
I love that they brought back Hostess Fruit Pie ad Spidey.
Yeah. Yes.
That's incredible.
For one whole page, it was awesome.
You've absolutely sold me on this now.
Whenever he, I love it. Moreland comes in and he jumps in and he goes, this is a very weird universe. And then he's throwing fruit pies at him. They're tasty treats. Yeah, that's a great,
fantastic,
great bit. Yes. Yeah, they even brought back the, what was it, 68? 69 Spider-Man comic from the animated series back in that time period. They even brought that Spider-Man back. in a couple of them. It's pretty funny.
What about the Electric Company Spider-Man?
I haven't seen him yet.
I'm sure they did, though.
No, I haven't seen that one yet, but they will. There's a lot more to go.
I got to be honest. Everything you've described about this is part of the problem I have with being 47 years old and reading comic books. It just sounds ludicrous. When you said Shakespeare's Spider-Man, I'm not sure if you could hear it, but I think you could probably detect my eyes rolling.
Shakespeare's Spider-Man was pants. That's actually created by Neil Gaiman, if you can believe it.
Is that right?
Is that part of that 1602 miniseries?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, I think you're right. I believe you're right. There's even a Pilgrim Spider-Man, man. Too, from the other thing they did, too. But yeah.
That thing wasn't a day at the beach.
But the way they incorporate it, and here's the cool thing about it, it's kind of like, almost like what DC did with the New 52. Basically, all these various Spider-Men that they've introduced at one point or another, they said, oh, this one exists, but then you never hear from him again. Well, now they're finally killing him off, saying, okay, he doesn't exist anymore. Shakespeare Spidey doesn't exist anymore. Fruit Pie Spidey, I think he got away.
Did you guys read Superior Foes of Spider-Man?
Absolutely.
I haven't caught up on it.
I only read the first two trades, but my God, it's good.
Yeah.
It is so good. Yeah, it is one of the most criminally underrated books of the last year and a half. Because not enough people read it. It ended up getting canceled, and it's a real shame.
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
Yeah, I've got all the issues. I just put them down to jump into the Spider-Verse storyline because that's seriously time-consuming. And I just said, well, I'll hold on to those for a while, but I'm going to get back to those.
Gil, you're going to love it. You're going to love it. What? Honestly, I feel like it was really inspired by the Matt Fraction Hawkeye comic, but in a really good way. Wow. I just thought it kind of extended that idea. It's super clever. Yeah, no, it's recommended to all listeners.
I think I only got through like 5 issues of that before I started on this other. All right, I see here where Eric wants to talk about Dark Horse.
Well, yeah, and I read this article, and then I after the fact I went back and tried to find it again, and it's weird. I Googled it, I can't find anything online, but I know I read this, that since Star Wars now is owned by Disney and they're moving forward with their own expanded Star Wars universe, that they are basically saying all of these extended Star Wars universe novels and comic books, it all is no longer part of the Star Wars canon, which is, I have mixed feelings about, because those Timothy Zahn novels, the Thrawn trilogy, are amazing. And I don't think, you know, and obviously now they'll never be made into films. And there's been some arguments, valid points made that they aren't that cinematic, but they're such great stories. And to hear them, you know, discounted that, you know, this character and the events in those books never actually happened in the Star Wars universe is a little disappointing. But anyway, Dark Horse has lost their license to be able to make Star Wars comic books. And I've been noticing that there's been a lot of sales on they're getting rid of their back stock, and you know, they've been selling them at very big discounts. I went and bought the digital versions of the Thrawn novels that have all been turned into graphic novels, and I just read like the first part of the first one. The artwork, I'm not that crazy about, but it's interesting. I haven't read that much of it, but I just thought I'd throw it out there just so people know that, you know, the time frame in which you will actually be able to buy Star Wars comics is rapidly closing. So get them while you can, because they will be collector's items and a thing of the past.
Star Wars was originally, I think, when it first came out, they were originally published by Marvel, and then Marvel just said, there's nothing we can do with this. And now that they own the Star Wars franchise, they're thinking, well, Disney altogether, Disney, Marvel, Lucasfilms, whatever, they're all saying, hey, there's more money to be made. Yeah. We need to do it, not anybody else. It's a little bit of capitalism at its best, but, you know, maybe they'll start publishing some more Star Wars comics. Now, I will say that I've never been impressed with very many Dark Horse comic art, but I do like a lot of the stories that they've done, Dark Horse comics have done, but the artwork, I've never been that amazed by. All right, guys.
It's pretty generic.
Yeah.
Hey, I have one thing, very quick. This actually was just announced while we were on the podcast. Scream Factory has announced the Escape from New York Collector's Edition Blu-ray.
Oh.
Oh, I must have it. Must. Oh.
Well, now that I have a Blu-ray.
I mean, I'm definitely buying this. It says extras new and existing are still in progress and will be announced in full detail sometime in February. Two-disc Blu-ray set will exceed the previous DVD special edition, which was actually stellar. I'm sure you guys have it, or at least some of you do. Mm-hmm. Eric, you got it.
No, the Blu-ray I have of Escape from New York is just like the movie only. I didn't even know there was it.
No, it's the two DVD set is what I'm saying. The one where it has the alternate opening and all the other stuff.
Yeah, I've got that.
So it's going to have all that and more. It says, we've created a brand new 2K high-definition scan of the interpositive struck from the original negative. So, street date is 421.
Wow.
All over that.
Hey, just about a month before Avengers 2.
Oh. So is every podcast between now and then just going to be us talking about how cool that movie's going to be?
Well, actually, we were going to talk about Hobbit films, but we're going to save that for the next podcast. So I guess the next podcast will be Hobbit films and Avengers 2.
Okay.
And Ant-Man. Oh, yeah, Ant-Man. I haven't seen the trailer yet that they're supposed to show on Agent Carter. Otherwise, I'd have been telling you guys to shut up. I'm going to turn the volume up. But no, they haven't shown that yet. But, yeah, okay, so that's going to be the next podcast. We're going to nerd out on some things like that. So, in fact, let's bring it into this one so that we can get it posted and scheduled and all that other good stuff that happens to it, especially since iTunes have changed their method this year. As of January 1st, the iTunes, they have it could take up to a week to get the podcast onto iTunes. So if you're a subscriber on iTunes, be ready for that. Too late now. Wow. You better be ready, but you can still get it on the website, nerduppodcast.blogspot.com. But anyway, also don't forget, buy from Amazon. Click on the link on our page. Buy our t-shirts, buy our coffee mugs, whatever it is, with the beautiful artwork by Tim Coker. And that way we can save money and, pay for these storage fees for this podcast. Anyway, let's go ahead and end this podcast. Let's call it a night. Get on with some fun stuff. We can rewind our DVRs and watch Agent Carter. Guys, in closing, any final words?
I have a final word. It's good to be back.
Amen to that.
It is good to be back.
Yeah, I got tired of piecemealing them. So, all right, well, that's it for the podcast this time around. We'll come back. We'll be on a regular basis again. In the meantime, I'm Gil T. Wilson. You can reach me on Twitter at Gil Wilson. And
I'm Eric Billingsley. You can reach me on Twitter at Eric Bill, ERICBILL.
I'm Tim Coker. You can reach me on Twitter, I guess, at Tim K. Has to Say, although I confess I almost never look at it.
And I am Tim Madsen. You can send your messages to me at TIMGONMAD. I will ignore them promptly.
As usual. And, barring anything that gets in the way, we'll get together again next week. Same time, same channel, same everything else. So thanks, guys, for joining me. Glad to have you guys back. And once again, everybody, thanks for joining us. And stay nerdy.
Stay nerdy.
Stay nerdy. Nerd Up Podcast.
www.gilwilson.com. If you need quality voice work for your radio commercials, audio for TV commercials, or maybe just for that message on hold for your business, you need to check out
www.gilwilson.com.
GILWILSON.com. www.gilwilson.com. Check it out. It's quirky. It's fun. It's innovative.